Okay.
I'm loving your report.
Good.
You didn't find it to be a significant problem.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Max Kalla, and I am chairing this afternoon's session. Could we just start with a few formalities? It would be really helpful if you could check that you've turned your mobile phones to off or silent, because the symphony of ringtones is not what we're going to try and do this afternoon. We're not anticipating any fire alarms, so if one goes off, the fire exit is right over in the corner. And also, you can get out through the back doors. It's a real privilege for me this afternoon to chair this seminar. I was a member of the Commonwealth Observer Group in 2012. I was actually in Tamale, which was a wonderful place for us to go. And I know the whole Observer Group were impressed with the welcome that we got in the country and the way in which everyone tried to help us. We made a series of recommendations, and I'm certainly personally looking forward to hearing how much progress the Electoral Commission has made since that time. So I'm very pleased to introduce the chairperson of the Electoral Commission of Ghana, Charlotte Asai. This is a position that she's held since June 2015. She previously served as the first female chairperson of the National Commission for Civic Education from 2011 to 2015. She has a background in law. She's a barrister at law and a solicitor of the Supreme Court of Ghana, and significant experience in working with financial institutions, including the Ghana Commercial Bank and Unibank Ghana Limited. The way we're going to run this afternoon is the chairperson is going to speak for 15 to 20 minutes, and then I suspect the most important part, which will be your questions and the answers that she will give. So if I could ask you to welcome the chairperson and hear her address.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and my sincere gratitude to Max and to the management of Chatham House for giving me this rare privilege to speak to all of you on what is going on in Ghana's electoral process, especially this year. It's 1 month to the elections, and I'm sure everyone is wondering, what is the chair of the Electoral Commission doing outside Ghana at this time when the EC has news updates every 5 minutes on Ghana Web? It's simply because Ghana may be having elections. And yes, the elections belong to the people of Ghana, but they are not a solely Ghanaian affair. We have Ghanaians outside of Ghana. We have other stakeholders in the electoral process. We have investors in Ghana. We have people who have a keen interest in Ghana and who need to know what is going on in Ghana. And so we thought it was important that the chair of the commission should take about 2-3 days and just engage stakeholders other than just the electorate in Ghana. I've been asked to speak about the processes and priorities of the Electoral Commission of Ghana. That by itself will take me the entire day. But if Max would permit me, I would like to speak about the priorities first, and then I would go into the processes. First, I think we start by a very quick lesson in Ghanaian political history. Ghana returned to constitutional government and multi-party politics in 1992 when we adopted the constitution. And since 1992, we have had 6 successful elections, and we're about to have the 7th on the 7th of December. Lucky 7-7. Now, all these elections, as you all know, have been very vigorously and very tightly contested. But at least from the perspective of international observers, if we leave out our political actors for a minute, they've all been deemed free, fair, and transparent. Now, for an African country such as mine, if you look back to a quarter of a century before we started this path of multi-party democracy, which is our 4th attempt, by the way, we endured 4 coup d'etats, and God knows how many other attempted coup d'etats that we escaped. And so for us to adopt multi-party democracy and be going into our seventh consecutive election is not a mean feat. While we have been doing this, as much as we like to berate our own elections, but while we've been doing this in Ghana, we've gone totally against the trends in our sub-region. Excuse me. In the same period that we've had our six elections and consolidated our democratic stability, our neighbors in the ECOWAS sub-region have suffered 14 coup d'etats. We've had three civil wars. We've had about 12 regional insurgencies and many foreign interventions. That sort of instability also breeds other problems. Religious extremism, lawlessness, terrorism, human trafficking, drugs and arms smuggling. And so in this sea of instability, where we've seen countries that around us, which have been almost brought to their knees, and some brought to their knees, because of the actions of minority groups fighting for control for natural resources, citizens fighting for power and for money. It's not unfair to say that Ghana has done very well for itself by staying on the path of multi-party democracy. And even where we've had challenges, we have continued down the path of the rule of law by going to the law courts to seek solutions to our problems. So we've come to realize in Ghana that our democracy is indeed precious. It protects the lives of our citizens and future generations. But it's also important to remember that we have responsibilities to ensure and to nurture that democracy. In the last six elections, very luckily for us, the winners and the losers on both sides have all understood the bigger picture, that even in a winner-takes-all race, the sum total of democracy for all is so much bigger than the individual prize of political victory. So we win or we lose together. And we do not need to look far to see the devastating consequences of when individual ambition or sectional interest is put before the greater good. So the priority of the Electoral Commission of Ghana to answer the question, and my priority and the priority of my commission, my colleague commissioners, and which we believe is a priority of all Ghanaians, is to have peaceful, undisputed, credible, transparent, inclusive elections on the 7th of December. How we are going to do this is what the processes would focus on. But even in trying to execute this priority, we have a challenge. The political stakeholders have also matured over the past 24 years, and they've become masters of raising the political temperature every election year. There's a very robust, vibrant industry every election year of peacemakers. People produce songs, there's concerts, there's seminars, there's football matches, there's, I don't know what we have not done in the name of making sure that Ghana is peaceful before, during, and after the elections. But one wonders, for a country that has had so many elections, even just the Fourth Republic, why does every election year bring this tension and this fear that the country is going to implode just because we're having an election? There's going to be one winner, and depending on how many parties are cleared by the candidates are cleared by the Supreme Court on Monday. Certainly several losers, including Hassan Ayariga, I'm sure. So there really is no basis for the tension. But the politicians seem to raise this temperature every election year. It's not just a peculiarly Ghanaian problem. I think everyone in the world is distracted by another presidential election which is taking place now, where a candidate is raising the specter of the media rigging the elections ahead of the elections and saying he will only accept the results when he wins. So the elections are only free and fair when he wins. So it's a kind of political insurance against losing. But for us in Ghana, we recognize that we have a legacy to protect and a very real challenge in doing that this December. So how exactly are we at the EC going to ensure that this election is a triumph and not a disaster? Yes, we've had 6 successful elections, but it's no reason to remain complacent, particularly from the 2012 elections where the results were challenged. The results of the presidential elections were challenged at the Supreme Court. Yes, the Supreme Court upheld the results announced by the Electoral Commission, but that also meant that there was some kind of sitting back and taking a look at the processes that led up to the dispute and making sure that we do not go down that path again. And so we've done a lot of work. We set up a reform committee, which had members of the political parties, civil society, to sit and look not just at the recommendations that were made by the Supreme Court judges, but also to look at the entire spectrum of the elections and to see where we could have improvements to ensure that the elections are more credible, more transparent, and more inclusive. So a lot of work went into that. Of the 29 recommendations that were made, the Electoral Commission accepted 27 of them, which we have systematically implemented and we're implementing this year. And so, for instance, there was an issue about the quality of the temporary staff that we use in the elections. There was the famous case of a presiding officer on the result sheets writing 270 in numerals and writing 270 in words rather than 270. So clearly, either he was really stressed or he just didn't learn his numbers very well. But then there were also party agents who signed on the 270. It did tell us that there's some work we need to do. So we've done some work in how we recruit our election officials. This year, we're going to be using about 146,000 of them. If you're hiring people, so many people, to perform very sensitive tasks on election day, on very short-term basis, then you have to focus a bit more on the caliber of the people you're bringing in. And also, of course, their qualifications, and then before you can focus on the training. We have made sure that we've extended the training that we're giving them. We changed the way we go about the recruitment. We set up an online portal where they could apply, so we could do the sifting at the head office level and we could control the standards. And then after the shortlisting, then the interviews could be done at the regional and district levels. So we're certain that we're getting better caliber people. We're training them better. We've also ensured that the new regulations which we're using for the elections include offenses and sanctions for officers who do not do their work properly. We have also done a lot of internal reforms because we realized that you could not sit all the consistent electoral reforms on a weak internal machinery. So we took our time to create a 5-year strategic plan, which creates a more robust internal administrative system upon which we can roll out all the new electoral reforms and perform even better for the electorate. We have restructured the operations directorate. We have broken some departments that were too big so that they could focus their energy. So for instance, instead of having human resource and general services, we separated the admin totally from the human resource so that the human resource department could focus more on staff training, staff recruitment, staff performance management. We have revamped our communications department so it is more open, more responsive, more proactive. We have increased the numbers. We've given them more training to enhance their capacity. In terms of the electoral reforms, we've done a lot of work. And some of this we have already seen from when we started the registration process. We introduced continuous voter registration so that not just the periodic registration, but especially from next year, this will be rolled out fully when every month people who have turned 18 or who have never registered before have the opportunity to go and register. For the first time this year, during the exhibition of the register, we used the biometric verification devices so that we could confirm the identities of the people who showed up at the exhibition centers, and we could also make sure that we had a sense of those who may have problems on election day, even though they are validly registered and the system, maybe because of low quality fingerprints or problems in how the fingerprints were captured, does not recognize them. We have ensured that people with disability and vulnerable persons, such as pregnant women, nursing mothers, and the aged, are given priority at all polling stations on election day. We have increased the number of polling stations from 26,002 to 29,000, but on election day, we'll be using 29,992, because there were 8 polling stations where people did not opt to register under. But in increasing the number of polling stations, this meant that the numbers of voters per polling station were reduced so that voting can happen faster, counting can happen faster, less pressure on the machines and the staff on election day. We have put clear provisions in the law for processes and procedures to be followed when we are adjourning the polls, so that if there's a disruption because of a natural cause or human activity, the polls will be adjourned and we can continue the polls the following day. We're working on multiple measures which we're going to roll out soon to reduce the incidence of rejected ballots, which is a major problem in Ghana. In fact, it's been said that when we have elections in Ghana, the rejected ballots, if there were candidates, they would be the third on the list of winners. We have ensured that we have said, and it's in the law, that we will publish the results of the presidential election for every polling station within 72 hours of the elections on our website. We have changed the collation process so that when the results move from the polling stations, after they've been signed by the presiding officers and the agents, it moves to the constituency collation centers where the counting agents and the returning officer would collate it and sign it. And then it is put on a screen and projected so everyone can see it and confirm, and then it is sent to us. And again, agents of the political parties and the candidates get copies of the results at the polling stations and at the constituency collation centers. This doesn't take away from the existing processes which we have, which ensure that political parties are present when ballots are being printed, they know when ballots are being moved and deployed to the stations, and on voting day, the presiding officer is required before the start of voting to open the box so that everyone who is there and the agents can see that it is empty, put his seal on the box, and the agents of the candidates and parties are also permitted to put their seals on the ballot boxes so that while voting is going on, the boxes are secure. And at the end of voting, they take off their seals, presiding officer takes off his seals before we start counting. We learned from 2012 that machines could fail us when we had a few challenges with the biometric verification devices. So this year, what we're doing is that every polling station would have 2 BVDs so that in the event that one BVD breaks down, a second BVD would be deployed and there'll be some spare BVDs at the polling station, at the districts, which would be deployed once you move on to the second one. There'll be 4 technicians in every district who are supposed to provide technical support to the polling stations in that district. And we're having a national ops room with 20 technicians who are supposed to be in constant engagement with the presiding officers on the ground to deal with any challenges which may come up. We would, of course, also have an open line, toll-free line, which would be announced to the public so we can get input from the public on what is going on election day across the country. And if we need to bring in the security agencies to support in any situation, they'll be quickly informed and deployed there. For the first time also, we have talked about the recruitment. So a lot of work has gone into this. The results, the pink sheets, the famous pink sheets, are going to have unique CBL numbers, and we're enhancing the security features on the pink sheets to better protect the integrity of the electoral system. Of course, the usual things where if for your when you receive a ballot, you must make sure that the ballot is stamped with a verification with a validation stamp. Otherwise, we would assume that it is ballots that are outside that polling station that have been brought in. All those integrity mechanisms are still in place. And we will still use the indelible ink, even though the biometric register ensures that we do not have multiple voting and impersonation, but we'll still use the indelible ink just as an additional prevention mechanism. At the end of the polls, at 5 p.m. after the voting has ended, the sorting of the ballots is done in the full glare of the public. Counting is done in public. The declaration is done in public. The recording of the results declared is done in public. And then the ballots, papers, and the declared polling station results are then moved to the Constituency Collation Center, of course, monitored by reps of the political parties and security personnel. At the collation centers, before the collation begins, the agents of the various parties from the polling station will be first required to confirm that the results which are being collated are exactly the same results declared at the polling station. This collation is done in front of the candidates, their agents, media, observers, and members of the public. At the end of the collation, the constituency results would also be declared in the presence of all the people who are at the constituency center. Now, from there, we move to the National Collation Center, which used to be the strong room. Here again, we're opening it up. We're going to have media, accredited media in there. We're going to have the reps of the parties will be required to confirm the figures with their agents at the constituency centers before the commission proceeds to put the figures together. And after the collation, then the party reps would again confirm that the figures are accurate for all the 275 constituency collation centers before the final declaration is made. This year, we're adding another level of integrity to the process. Other after publishing the results per polling station, we're also using technology to electronically transmit the results and the scanned polling station results to the National Results Collation Center. We are still in the process of finalizing this and we'll do a demonstration to IPAC before election. But the main results transmission system still remains the manual one, which is what is in the law. The electronic one is just a parallel one to make sure, just to serve as confirmation. We'll also be using the results that will be collated by CODEO, which is a large umbrella organization of professional bodies, civil society, and they are being sponsored to do by the, some of the multilateral agencies to do a parallel voter tabulation. We'll be checking in on their results to make sure that it's consistent with what we're also declaring. So we are still trying to figure out at the Electoral Commission how it is possible to influence this process and change the results, as Gabby has accused me of several times. And maybe today he will enlighten me on how this can happen. But personally, I haven't figured it out. And one of the greatest challenges we face in going into this election is the potential for the media to call the results ahead of the Electoral Commission. Before we call the results, we have to make sure that the results are accurate. And in fact, I did say yesterday that if you have a 1% margin, it means that it is really close. And so rather than declaring, it will be more prudent to stop and do a total check through again before you declare, especially in such a high stakes game. I think it's better we spend a bit more time making sure the results are accurate than to rush to declare results that are not accurate. So we're worried about the media declaring results. We're worried about the abuse of social media. If people start sending out stories which are not true, and then this could cause chaos, and we may not have enough time, even with the security agencies, to react to this and correct it, and some damage has been done. So we really do need to work closely with the political parties and all the stakeholders for everyone to understand the risk inherent in behavior that is not proper, that is untoward, and the fact that this has consequences for all of us and not just the Electoral Commission. It is the future of our nation that is at stake, and it is important that we hold ourselves to a higher standard. From the perspective of the Electoral Commission, we're doing everything we can to make sure that the elections are safe, people can vote without intimidation, to make sure that we follow the law in all situations, no matter how difficult it is, to make sure that we do what is right according to law and to conscience. But we need the political actors to work with us. There have been instances of violent attacks on some properties and officials of the Electoral Commission this year during the limited voter registration and voter transfer exercises. And it's getting difficult now to send staff out after those incidents have happened to again continue with the work. And so some of these activities have been disrupted in some districts. There's also been a lack of criminal prosecution, which only emboldens the perpetrators to continue. And so we've been working closely with the security agencies to call on them to treat electoral offenses as criminal offenses and to treat it with all the seriousness that it deserves in the interest of the entire country. We have identified about 81 constituencies which we think are flashpoints for violence. The police have identified over 5,000 polling stations as hotspots. So we have had to work very closely with the police, and we know that they're engaging the political parties to come down on the violent rhetoric and just act in a more responsible manner so that we can all have peace before, during, and after the elections. We are resolute at the Electoral Commission that we would deliver good elections this year. A lot of work has gone into this. We've done all kinds of backup plans to make sure that if anything fails, there's a plan in place to support the process. We are very confident that we will succeed. We have history on our side, we have experience on our side, and we have a reputation for delivery in Africa. I'm convinced that all the recent reforms which we have implemented and we are still implementing have strengthened and modernized our process and also strengthened the institution. And come December 7th, I'm certain that Ghana would have very successful elections that would be the admiration of the continent. I did promise Max that I will not speak for long so I can have more time to take questions. And so I'll end here, and it will be my pleasure to take your questions, your inputs, and of course, your suggestions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I just remind everybody, this session this afternoon is on the record, which means that it'll be possible for the session to be broadcast and speakers to be identified. It's now time for questions, and I would very much like it that we didn't get speeches. I will stop you if you're going to make a long speech, but actually ask the chair a question, and if you could identify yourself and if you represent an organisation, who you're representing as part of your introduction, that would be very helpful. So if I could take some indications for who would like to speak, please. If we start here, and if you could wait for the microphone to reach you, and then we'll go across this way, and we'll work our way across that side afterwards. Yes, sir.
My name is Michael Amboa from SOAS. Thank you very much for your speech. I am personally convinced that this election would be the easiest to conduct because so much has been done. But could you just clarify one thing for us, madam? I understand that the contract has been awarded to Aerovote, and part of the tender process was that there should be an inspection of the premises and the facility that would actually print the pink sheets. Aerovote's tender didn't state where they would be printed and where they were located to print it. And that was a fundamental condition for them even to pass the tender process. So how did they get past this point, even to be awarded a contract, when there's no evidence where they are based, where they will print it, whether they are actually capable of doing that?
Thank you.
Can I take about three?
We'll take three questions to start with, please.
Thank you very much. My name is Roger Cranton from the Commonwealth Secretariat. I have just three quick questions. The first one is the 29 recommendations made by the committee. You accepted 27. What are the two that you didn't accept, and what were the reasons? Then the second one is the social media. We know that social media is in there, in thing now. We heard that the police may want to scramble the social media during the election day. That means to curtail transparency and communication. What do you have to say about that? And the last one is calling the election. You know, around the world, media can call the election, but that's not the official result. So the fact that somebody may do a collation and may predict that this particular party may win or lose doesn't mean that's the official position. And I think we shouldn't be too worried about media or any person calling election. CNN call election, Joy FM call election in the past. It doesn't make any difference. So I think I just want to also know your take on that. Thank you very much.
And if you could just pass the microphone along, please.
David Owusu-Yanuma. I'm a member of the NPP. There was an article on Ghana Web by the former Attorney General of the Republic, Martin Amidu. And in that article, he suggests that your outfit is out to rig the elections. It's a very well-reasoned argument that he puts forward. And one of the things that he relies on is various decisions which have been made by your outfit, which have been overturned by the courts. Mr. Amwa has referred to pink sheets and the contract being awarded to a company which used to operate in this country, which recently went into liquidation. These decisions of your outfit are giving cause for concern.
Can you give us more?
Sorry. Could you just come to the question, please?
Why should Ghanaians give you the benefits of the doubt?
You said there were decisions which had been overturned
by
the courts.
I'm
waiting for that.
For example, Dr. Indum, for example, you disqualified him. The court have said you were wrong. There are other cases before the court.
Which ones?
Okay. Can I let the chair answer why we think they should have confidence? We'll work our way through the questions, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. The Aeroport contract, this dispute started while I've been in the UK, this whole brouhaha. But I think the first allegation we had was that we had awarded a contract to a company in the UK which had gone bankrupt. We have not awarded a contract to a company in the UK, it's a Ghanaian registered company. The one of the requirements was that they tell us about the security features which could be included in the pink sheets to enhance the integrity and the security of the pink sheets. It was one of the more critical criteria for award of the contract and not even the pricing. The other thing was that a lot of the other bidders were not going to print in Ghana. In 2012, the contract was awarded to Buck Press. Buck Press did not print the pink sheets in Ghana. It was printed by Aeroport in the UK. And so there was also the risk of going with an untested printer, which was now being brought in. The premises were inspected, and some of the companies that are now disputing the award of the contracts did admit that they were not going to print it in Ghana. So we could not even inspect where they were going to do the printing. I am very confident that in awarding this contract, we went through a very rigorous procurement process, and we followed the law in its entirety. The requirements that a company has to meet to do business with the EC is very clearly stated, and we follow the guidelines given us by the Public Procurement Authority. I would wish that I think Buck Press is the one making this allegation, who still continues to do printing jobs with the EC, by the way. If he has any concerns that there was some impropriety, he can file a complaint with the Public Procurement Authority and have them come and investigate it fully. But I do not think that fighting a media war and putting out half-truths is helpful to anybody in this process. It just raises the levels of anxiety and tension, which is not necessary. On the two reforms which were not accepted by the commission, which were the first one was that civil society organizations should be made members of IPAC. The commission felt that we should not accept that, and that IPAC should be left as the platform for engagement of political parties, and that if we needed to engage civil society, we could engage them outside of IPAC. The second one was no verification, no vote, which meant that on election day, everyone who voted must go through the biometric verification process. We did not believe this because we had learned also from the lessons in other jurisdictions such as Nigeria and even our own examples in 2012, where you can have the biometric verification equipment, even if it is working at its optimum contracted level, which would be 99%, it meant that there was a 1% chance that it could still falsely reject people who were valid voters. We did not think that we should have a policy that would lead to anyone being disenfranchised, which can also lead to violence at the, you know, at the polling stations. So what we did was to say that we would continue with the biometric verification process, but we would have a manual verification process as an additional supporting verification mechanism. The law required that we work out the manual verification process at IPAC and have the agreement of political parties. The system we have put in place is if you get to the polling station, you present your card or you mention your name, the name reference officer would find your name on the register. They will scan your barcode. Once your barcode is scanned, it is deactivated, so it can't be scanned again. When they scan your barcode, your picture and your biographic information would show up, as in your name, your age, and all that, which shows that you are validly on the register. Then you're supposed to move to the biometric verification machine and put your fingers on it to be verified. If you go and that does not work, then the manual verification process kicks in. So there will be forms, very limited amounts, and I'll explain why the quantities will be very limited. There'll be forms at the polling stations. The presiding officer would fill the form with the voter's details, polling station number, ID number, and the time when the false reject happened. Then the voter is required to sign or thumbprint the form. The presiding officer also signs the form. Then the party agents also sign at the back of the form to show that they have seen that the person is a valid voter, the details are on the register, the picture tallies with the person standing in front of them. But for some reason, the machine has failed to validate the person before the person is now given a ballot paper to go and vote. The results, the collation sheets at the polling stations have also been amended to have a column to show people who have been biometrically verified, which the counter on the machine would show to everyone at the polling station, and also people who have been manually registered. And the forms for those who have been manually registered, the number they should tally with the number of forms that they have, so that at the end of the day, it's easy to say how many people were manually and biometrically verified at the polling station, which should tally with the number of valid ballots in the box. Then there was the one on the clamp on social media. Yes, we heard from the IGP just like everybody else. We did have the opportunity to interact with the IGP at the commission level. We did tell him our concerns. First, we didn't think he had the power under the law to do a clamp on social media by himself. We get his fears and his concerns, but we also did tell him that even for us at the commission, we would be engaging our election officials via social media, so we also needed it, and we didn't think it was the right thing to do. We felt the way to go was to do a lot of engagement with the electorate on the risk of the abuses of social media, and so I think that's the way the police is going. I also did hear from the Minister of Interior, and I think he has confirmed publicly that there would not be a clamp on social media on election day. Calling the elections, I think, yes, we all know it is provisional results and not final, but it will depend on how it is called. And when you have a situation like we have in Ghana, where a lot of media houses are owned by political actors, then it becomes worrying as to how they do it and the consequences for all of us. So that's really the concern, and not just calling results out provisionally. We all know, yes, the final results can only be called by the Electoral Commission. But depending on how people put it out, especially when there are political actors behind it, then when the final results are different from what they've actually put out, it can create some anxiety, some tension, and some sense of something untoward happening when it hadn't happened. There is the allegation that the commission's... first, I would not even go into Martin Amidu's comments because I do not think that I need to respond to his comments. But I do not also agree that a lot of the commission's decisions have been overturned by the courts. You mentioned two, and I think it's a bit unfair. We've had 15 lawsuits this year. Several have been dismissed. We have tried very hard to work in accordance with the law, at least our understanding of the law. And we feel that, yes, if people go to court to challenge decisions of the commission, that is the proper place to go. And we have abided by the rulings of the court in most of the instances. Where courts even asked us to do things that we did not feel we had the power to do under the law, we did tell the other parties to go back and get a clarification, and then the courts came back and said this order supersedes the law, which is also an implied admission that we did not have the power to do what was being requested under the law as it was. The law says that there are some requirements you must meet in submitting your nomination forms to the commission. You must have 432 presidential nomination forms, valid voters subscribing to your forms. You must, one candidate cannot subscribe to the forms of more than one presidential candidate. We examined the forms and we took a decision like any other returning officer in the world or any other electoral commission. It requires that the returning officer make a decision and then that decision is taken to the commission and the commission accepts or rejects that decision. The decision was taken by the commission not to accept the 13 nomination forms that were presented by the other candidates because there were failings in the law. The courts have not said that these failings were not there. The dispute has been as to the determination of what is the nomination period. We have felt that because you have five candidates challenging and every day new candidates are coming and challenging, which is really their legal right to do, it is better for us to go and challenge this at the Supreme Court so that there's one definitive ruling that covers everyone, because that's really the main issue as to how do you define the nomination period. The Supreme Court has heard both sides today. It's going to give a ruling on Monday. When the ruling is given, then we would respect it. I think the reason why Ghanaians should have confidence is that even when it has been very difficult for us, we have made sure that we were following the law very strictly. If you have the kind of political situation we have, where you have two very strong parties, almost equal strength, a history of very tight elections, and then you have all these other smaller parties, the safest place for the Electoral Commission is to follow the law. And we've always said it, that it's not always easy for us. We don't always like the law, but we're not parliament. The law does not always seem fair to us, but we have a duty to follow the law as it is. Once we start moving away from the law and putting our interpretations on the law, or going according to public opinion, which in my view is a very fickle thing, I think that is a bigger risk that the commission is leading the country into. The commission has an obligation to follow the law all the time. That can be challenged, and we respect the court rulings, but it does not mean that we should not follow the law. And I think the confidence that people should have is that you have a commission that does its best to follow the law. If our understanding of the law is different from the judge's understanding, we would defer to the judge. The law lies in the bosom of the judge. But until that happens, we would continue to follow the law.
Okay, thank you. Can we take the next batch of questions, please? So we've got one, two, three. If we take the gentleman just in the back there first. We've got about 10 minutes to go.
Hello, it's Zhang He from CCTV Africa. And we just know the dispute by the court as some of the candidates were blocked. But as we are waiting for the ruling next week, do you think it will delay the process of the election? And if the court supposed that to put the candidates into the election, how can you make sure that names are on the ballot? And also, the upcoming election is a test for the democracy in Ghana, and how will you do to ensure that it goes very smoothly? Thank you very much.
Lady in the front, please.
Thank you very much, Max. My name is Josephine Ojambo, Deputy Secretary General, Commonwealth Secretariat. Charlotte, I'd like to congratulate you for the progress made over the 1 year the fact that we have come this far and you can give us an account of work done, the disputes that you have been able to settle, and those that are outstanding, shows that you are actually very well aware about the process you're taking Ghana through. Congratulations. I have two questions. One, how can the international community participate in ensuring a credible election? And how can we later also ensure that the lessons learned are shared within the region, within Africa, and perhaps a further field? And then the second, could you tell us a little bit about how you will use the peace summit that's upcoming to ensure that the processes of arbitration amongst the contenders lead to a peaceful election? Thank you.
Thank you. And there's a gentleman just behind that penultimate row.
Thank you. My name is Samson Asafo, Ghanaian citizen and research student at UCL. Thank you for the time here to speak to the Ghanaian public and the international community. My question is, have you made any plans to hold such similar fora in Ghana to engage with the very citizens who the elections matter to most? You've talked about engagement with the public. I think it would be a very useful exercise to allow more questions from the people. Secondly, you've talked about openness and transparency and all that. There have been announcements that there will be fees, accreditation fees for the media who will be covering these elections. As a publicly funded organization, do you think it is right that you should be charging such fees? And if you're going to charge the fees, how much? And lastly, you've talked about various stakeholders. I'm sure the Ghanaian community here or everywhere around the world are also stakeholders. There is a law which you are supposed to implement, and you've shown clearly you're a stakeholder for the law. So I'm asking, when do you plan to implement ROPA? Thank you.
There's a gentleman just in front who should be the last man, I think, to speak, because we'll be running out of time.
Yeah, my name is William, security expert. And my question is about cyber security, which is on rise. I think it is increasing, sorry. You've talked about biometric and all those security issues, I mean, measures. Just want to find your views about hacking into the server to change the result, which may happen. Thank you.
I would have been very surprised if we didn't have a question on ROPA. If we get a Supreme Court ruling on Monday, it will not affect the elections. If the court shuts the door to the candidates whose nominations were not accepted, fine, we can move on. If the court decides to open the door, I think the sense of the court, which is our sense, is that everything has to be done very expeditiously to save the electoral calendar so that the constitutional order is not disrupted. And so we'll work within very short timelines. It won't require a lot of time to do whatever needs to be done to get the ballots prepared. So we're not concerned about that. I think in terms of what is going to ensure a smooth process, I think that those are all the processes I laid out. And we're pretty confident that we've made all the arrangements we need to do. Of the 97 items which need to be at every polling station, 95 of them are ready, and most of them have been sent out to the regions. All we have to do now is print the ballot papers and deploy and send out the biometric verification devices. Registers are being printed as we speak, so we think we're in a good place. The international community, Dr. Diambo, I think they usually would participate as observers. And this year we're looking at welcoming an extraordinary number of observers. I think the EU alone is sending a strong team of 90. The AU is sending about 50. ECOWAS is sending a team. The National Republican Institute and the NDI are also sending a team, I believe. Qatar Foundation is coming. We received so many requests. Of course, my own association, the African Association of Electoral Authorities, would send a team. I think in all, we're expecting about 300 international observers. The Commonwealth, of course, is sending a team. And it's so much that we've had to seek the support of the UN on the ground to help us manage the deployment of observers. Of course, we will do the engagement. We'll give them the laws and the policies they require to do a good job and to understand the electoral process. But what we're doing is we do not want observers to be clustered in certain parts of the country and not in others. We want them to be as widespread as possible. So we are working, the UN has just written that they would second a staff to come and work with us for that period to manage the deployment of international observers. The international community has also been very supportive in checking in when, based on media reports, they find anything, going to find out what are you guys doing and telling us these are international best practices and encouraging us to go by those best practices. So we've been really grateful for that. In terms of knowledge sharing, well, I am the president of the African Association of Electoral Authorities, so I do have a double responsibility to make sure that the challenges that are seen in elections throughout Africa, other electoral management bodies learn from those challenges and don't repeat those mistakes. And also to make sure that the good things that are being done in some countries, we support our sister EMBs to learn from those good practices. And so, for instance, when Ghana did the biometric register, several other African countries have come to come and learn and even improved on the system. The DRC has come to see us about support for having a biometric registration process and also to understand the deployment of technology end-to-end in our elections. So we are working with other African countries. We also go to them to learn what they are doing right and so we can implement it here. We believe that the peace summit will be helpful, if for nothing else, in terms of lowering the political temperature and just getting the electorates to calm down and know that we are not on the brink of war. We're looking forward to having all the key candidates together, relaxed, for everyone to know that this is just an election. It's not a do or die matter. There's going to be one winner and a few sore losers, but the country would go on. We're also hoping this time that talking to the international partners who are supporting it, that as part of the peace summit, we go beyond just the elections in Ghana, just the elections in December, to getting parties to commit to the bigger things that would ensure that we have a more stable democratic process, some key changes that are needed to our political culture and to how the discourse is carried out. So we are working on that and we're very certain that it will be successful. There was a question on how we, whether we do these kinds of fora with the electorate in Ghana. And the answer is yes, every week at 8:30 p.m. on GTV, we have a live studio audience. We bring them into the studio. We discuss various aspects of the electoral process and we give them the opportunity to ask questions. We started that, I think, in September. September? Yes. We've had so far, and we have different personalities from the media who come and host because we wanted the media to also be part of the process and also get to learn a bit more about the electoral process. So, for instance, we've had first-time voters come into the studio to talk about the process and what happens and their responsibilities as voters. We've had an audience of just women voters to find out how we can support the women better and what they want to see out of the whole electoral process. We've had persons with disabilities come in. We said what we're doing to make voting easier for them, such as the tactile ballots, which enables people with visual impairments to vote independently. And they also shared, gave us their suggestions on how we can help them be more effective as voters. We've had the security agencies and civil society come in and talk. We're hoping to bring political parties into the discussion at some point, just for people to understand how the process works better. And it's a live studio audience, and we take questions from them. It is carried, I think, on some radio stations, and we're looking at spreading it out even more. When we also go to the regions for programs, we engage the media directly and also get them to know the process better so they can inform the public better. On the accreditation fees, we're not charging fees for covering the elections. We are charging the cost, we're passing on the cost of the badges because it's a large number and we cannot afford it. There is a budget shortfall which we're still trying to make up. When we extended the exhibition period for an extra week, it cost us a lot of money. There have been other things also which have happened in this year's electoral calendar which were not anticipated and which have brought additional charges to us, such as continuous voter registration. It was not budgeted for. The deletion and the re-registration of NHIS people. So we've had all kinds of, and even in 2012, this was the same thing, it's not new. In 2012, the media paid the cost of the badges. It's the cost of the badges that is being directly passed on. It's not a fee for covering the elections. So there's some error there in what they're thinking. But I think my team on the ground are engaging the media for them to understand better. But when we asked them, because we're also including the media this year in special voting, there were very high numbers from the media. And so someone has to bear the cost of the badges, which would identify them as media, so that someone doesn't pluck out their eyes for getting too close to the ballot box on election day. ROPA is, yes, it's something we really want to do. And it's in our five-year plan. It's in our five-year strategic plan that we must implement ROPA by 2020. The challenge with ROPA is the high levels of mistrust that we have in our political system. We have a political system that is very inclusive, and political parties play key roles in the process. In implementing ROPA, we must make sure that the same integrity mechanisms and the same levels of inclusiveness that we have in Ghana are carried out internationally. Now, that's a challenge. It's not something that we can roll out by ourselves. It is something that we must sit not just with political parties, but with other stakeholders, and also really travel around a bit and see how other countries, particularly in Africa, have done it, so that when we start doing it, it's a system that is clear to all, it is agreed, the roadmap is agreed by all. It's also going to cost the political parties, because when we do registration, political parties are present. When we do exhibition of the register, they are present. When we do voting and printing of ballots, they are present. And so we have to make sure that we don't lose any of this out in implementing ROPA. So that's why we put it in the five-year plan, so we can sit with all the stakeholders and really plan this, study best practices, and then we can implement it properly. I came in the middle of last year. I came in July. There was a district-level election in September. Budget had already been prepared ahead before I came. And even if it had been factored into the budget, it would have been very difficult to roll out without the space for that kind of engagement. So we want to take our time and do it properly. And that's why ROPA, at least since I've been there, has not been implemented. I cannot tell you why before I came it wasn't implemented, but I'm sure it's because of the same challenges. So we are committed to doing it. We want Ghanaians outside of Ghana to have the right and the privilege to elect their leaders, but we do believe it should be done properly. Cybersecurity and the election results. Our election results process is manual. Even the electronic results transmission system we're trying to introduce is a parallel one, but in the event of any discrepancy, the manual system still prevails. So we really have no concerns about somebody hacking into the system and changing the results, because it's a manual process. The only challenge I can foresee is because we've committed to loading the results onto the system after they've been declared, somebody hacking in and bringing that down. But the key participants, the political parties, would already have their paper results and it should have been announced. So we really don't face a risk of results being, altered due to cybersecurity concerns. Where we can have a problem is if there's a hack into our database, which is where the register, the biometric register is. But we do very, very, very almost daily backups, and we have two backup systems. So if one comes down, we would bring up number two. If number two comes down, we'll bring up number three, because we're very conscious of those risks. There are a lot of attacks on our website, a lot of attempts at bringing it down. It just means people will be without news for a few days and we'll find alternatives, but the results, the integrity of the system would not be compromised because of cyber security threats. Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm really sorry we're out of time. I know there are more questions, and I'm sure that you will love to get them answered. Can I thank the chair for coming today, for answering the questions? Can I wish the Electoral Commission of Ghana every success in managing this event to a successful outcome, and that the people of Ghana have a peaceful, safe and democratic outcome which represents the will of the people so that they get the government that they voted for. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Well, did I ask your question?
No, because you were answering them.